Recording the call. Here we go. Welcome back to part three of our
hello
discussion. Jean Patrick here. Coco is back. See what happens.
She is back.
She was chasing a bug, apparently.
She was off chasing some big flying bug that had been zipping around my apartment. but obviously, she has either decided that she's bored of the bug, or she has caught it, eaten it, and is now back to hang out.
Excellent. So we have had a far-ranging discussion, as far as you were concerned, over the past several days, as far as we're concerned, you know, in the past, like, hour, about, it started off with the Paula Deen plantation wedding festival scandal and issues of racism and classism and all kinds of awesomeness, moved on to discussions about the commodification of SM and all kinds of other fascinating issues along those lines. Started talking about teaching and presenting and all that kind of thing. And in talking about demos and how those work and what part they may or may not have in teaching classes, Jean Patrick had a really interesting discussion about the intention and something else. So what was it that you said? Three things, and I hope.
So it came out of your talking about this request to do a demo for your race play class and how in certain ways problematic doing that kind of demo can be, because it has to be with not just any top person for the purposes of the class. You have to find the right person to be in the scene with you. You have to make sure that it works for the audience, and right, like, there's lots of caveats basically.
Work.
And because that shit is heavy, and I've always been in the times that I've been to classes, I've always been a real believer in the separation between sort of lab / learning space and scene / play space.
Right, and just let us underscore that the types of classes and demos that you are going to be doing yourself are probably going to be primarily around.
Yeah, it's primarily rope. Now, having said that, I have had three grues happen here in Toronto.
Tell the people what the grues are.
Yep, the GRU is, was started by my friend Great Answer. GRU stands for Great Answer's Ropetastic Unconference Extravaganza. To really make it like a really quick description, it is a 1.5-day educational event where the schedule and classes are all designed by the attendees at the beginning of the first day. So if you have something you're passionate about, you come and lead a class in it. If you have something that you are interested in finding more about, you request that somebody else lead a discussion on that who would know more than you. The discussions are always very wide-ranging, and it's a real opportunity for people to spend some time talking about that which they are passionate about. When they started happening, it was the rope-tastic was a little bit more highlighted because most of what was happening at them was about rope. But over time, they've changed, and the rope-tastic aspect of it has sort of fallen a little bit more towards the back because the interest in them grew. Ha. So, and I smack myself in the face for my own pun. And then, I have seen, it's terrible, puns are terrible. So I have seen lots of different class/demo moments happening at a GRU, which is, and I'm going to just recognize this, it is a different situation than having somebody show up for an entire self-contained, organized class.
Right.
Because the nice thing about a GRU, and this is one of the main rules about, this is one of the main rules around the unconference model in general, is that things are over when they're over. You don't have a set time limit of how long things have to take. They take the time that they take for them to be actually done. Mm-hmm. This is often very different when I think about more formal class or workshop structures, not that I have done, but that I have organized quite a few of them here in Toronto for other people presenting. And they always function inside of this, you know, relatively set time frame so that everybody who's attending knows what time they need to show up, what time they're going to be able to leave, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So my hesitancy around or my hesitancy is a weird word, but it's not really a question, and it's not as active as a concern. Maybe it's just a curiosity. That when you're doing a demo for something that is as edgy, as potent, as deep as race play, you're doing it inside of a set time frame, which means, which I would think would mean that while you're in the moment doing the demo, you're conscious of how much time it's taking. Because it has to fit in with the chunk of time that has been allocated for the workshop, as well as leaving some time towards the end so that people can ask you questions about this amazingly intense thing that they just saw.
Right.
So, as someone who has a background in theater, who has not acted himself, but has done a fair amount of performance, I would say, but who has spent a lot of time with actors, I know that no matter how deep an actor goes into a character, into a part, into a moment, there is the sort of hindbrain that is always saying, I have to go pick up that kettle now, or this is the line that I have to exit on.
Correct.
I know that this scene is only this long and I can't take as much time as I might like in this moment because the play has to continue. So there's always this little bit of a level that is conscious of what's happening, paying attention to it, and keeping track of the flow of things.
Right.
So that's a distance out.
Yes. Yeah.
So when I think about the things that I've always questioned in terms of putting demos inside of workshops or demos inside of a class, is it's the questions of engagement, time, and intention. I guess those were the three things: engagement, intention, and time. That because you are constricted by time, your intention and engagement in what you're doing is going to be not allowed to just be what it wants to be. So you have to sort of, I guess what I'm wondering is, how much do you feel like you have to either cut a scene short or have a path set up for that scene so you have a time so that you know it only lasts for half an hour,
right?
For instance.
I will say the idea of it, of you not doing what you want to do, is a bit of a red herring, because if I'm doing a scene in a class, what I want to do is to share. If I'm doing a scene with a partner, what I want to do is to experience. I give a fuck about who's watching, right?
Okay.
In the course of doing a scene in a classroom setting, it's going to be more demonstrative. One of the more intense scenes I've ever had, of the most intense scenes I've ever had in my life, you would have seen someone talking to me. Is that very flashy? No. Would that work as a demo? Yes, it would, because at that point you can pull people around and have them as close as you want, and have them really experience what that feels like. But the intention at that point is not to have a personal moment with my partner. The intention at that point is to show what a personal moment with someone might look like. And so the fact is that my intention is different for those two scenarios. And is there a time when you have to be aware of the time and the people around? Absolutely. But that doesn't mean that I am not there and fully and having a full experience. It won't be the fullest experience because I have to remain anchored. Part of what happens, it's very different in a classroom setting, is that you're right. The higher brain is always going to be in control and is not going to let go. Part of what I enjoy very much about play is that my play usually happens with some sort of submission attached to it. I can play and have a really good time if I'm not submitting. But the deeper stuff is when the submission gets kicked in. And in a situation where I'm in front of a classroom, I cannot fully submit because I'm in charge. I'm in charge of that fucking classroom. I'm in charge of the fucking people sitting there. And I have to come back and tell them about what I saw down the rabbit hole. So if I'm still down there, I can't do that. And at that point, my higher submission is to the situation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense.
And so what I'm doing is saying, you know, I have my, what is that called when people use like belay lines? I have my belay line in the mountain. I'm there with the class going, I'm here with you guys. I'm going to go down a little bit. I'm going to tell you what's happening as I'm down here, and then I'm going to come back. If I'm actually doing one of these things, one of these scenes, there is no line. I hand it over to the person I'm submitting to, and I say, you have to bring me back because I'm not coming back for anyone else but you.
So I would hope.
Things are very different.
Yes. Okay. So they're totally, and I get the frameworks that you're talking about, and I get the differences that you're talking about. And it makes me think of two things. One, it makes me think, I would hope that the class is able to look at what happened as an example and not as a template.
Yeah, I can do my best to point that out, and I will say certainly, I feel like people get it
mm-hmm.
from what I have heard from folks after when they're talking about it. Inevitably, they talk about it in terms of what they saw and what they felt when they were seeing it, which to me feels like an observer mindset.
Yeah.
And I think that observer mindset puts people at a bit of a distance, which is so critical, versus I've heard people say stuff like, oh, that was kind of hot, but it's rare that someone's just sitting there fapping to it. There's almost always a caveat when someone expresses an arousal or a desire to share in a similar experience. So I feel
right.
Like context and because of the fact that I'm pretty when I communicate that I think that people do get it. Are there going to be people who are like, yeah, I'm going to run off and do the scene that Mo did? Probably. But I think that's probably rarer.
Well, and I'd also imagine that anybody who's coming to one of your, specifically I'm going to talk about this one, somebody who's coming to one of your race play classes is at a level in their own experience and development as a person of kink, as a, you know, solid, hopefully solid ethical person of kink, and somebody who's interested in furthering himself as a person is going to be at a level where they will be able to look at that and say, that's what happened to you.
Right.
And that's lovely. And I can take from that, but I'm not going to try to reproduce it because I'm not doing that to you.
No. And there was no way to reproduce it because the scenes are particular to my own story.
Right.
You know, is there commonality? Sure. Does anyone want to play like the runaway slave who's been captured and is being terribly abused by it? Yes. That's no special unique story. You know,
mm-hmm.
how I experience it is certainly going to be different from someone who maybe has not done the degree of research that I have done. You know, there are people who do a recreation of a lynching scene. They might do it because they're curious about what the humiliation might be like. They might be curious to feel what it is to be in profound danger. Has that person done 6 months of nonstop research on the history of lynching in America and looked at thousands upon thousands of images of what a dead corpse hung up by its neck, surrounded by smiling white people, looks like? Perhaps they have. I doubt it, though.
Uh-huh.
And so for me, that particular scene has a particular resonance. Having had the experience of being in the middle of a scene that did go a bit off rail because I lost all hold on reality as far as I was concerned in that moment. And seeing a room full of white people staring at me and having a flashback to something that happened, you know, that didn't happen to me, you know, but that felt like a flashback. And to have that kind of experience puts me in a different place than the person who's like, yeah, I'm going to get a bunch of white people and I'm going to run around. They're going to catch me and pretend to lynch me. So my experience is going to be different from theirs. You know, and they might have an incredibly profound experience, or they might just get a situation where they were turned on and it was really hot. And all of those, both of those scenarios and anything in between are all completely valid and different. You know, you can't ever recreate it. So, you know, to try would be ridiculous because the second you tried, you realize I'm not Mo Williams. I'm not that other person. So I can't have that experience.
Uh-huh.
And at the same time, someone learning a particular knot or a particular tie can have a similar experience. You can, you know, but again, it's not going to ever be the same because it's not that moment. It's not that body. It's not that rope.
Right. But I guess it's sort of like so for me, it's the difference between, maybe it's something about the difference between a technique class and a process class.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just language that I'm sorting out in my head right now, but technique is something that you, technique is like a learned skill.
Sure.
That you can drop into a process,
yeah.
Maybe. So you can learn a TK, you can learn the summer of a bowline, you can learn the whatever the other fucking cool hip knot is, the thing that all the kids are tying these days. You can learn that shit, and then you can drop that into your own process, your own flow, your own experience. And that's one kind of class where it basically teaches you, here's the thing that you can take elsewhere. That's a technique class. And then a process class would be, here's an example of that elsewhere you could take that thing you learned in the technique class.
Right. And the difference between a technique and a process class is that in a technique class, there's correction. You can say, actually, that's not how that knot goes.
Yes.
Actually, don't put that knot on this major artery, you know, for example. In a process class, there's not going to be that hard and fast right and wrong, you know, and even in classes where there are things that I would personally consider to be right or wrong, in sharing that with other people, what I would say is I have very strong feelings about this particular point.
Right.
Why I have strong feelings about it. You have to make up your own mind. However, here's my experience. Here's how. Perfect example of that is that, you know, inevitably I'll have someone raise their hand and say, I'm curious about this kind of play, but as a white person, I feel weird about approaching a black person saying, hey, let's do whatever. And I'm like, as you should. My personal feeling, about which I feel very strongly, is that I am put off if a person who wants to assume the oppressor role approaches me, first and foremost, to do that kind of scene if it's not someone that I know intimately and well. If that's your come on, I'm going to be turned off because in my experience, and I feel very strongly about this, those sorts of people are not looking to connect with me. They're looking to do a thing. And I'm not,
yeah.
And I'm not a thing to be done, you know. So while I could just come out and say, "Fuck you, white people, for trying to roll up on a black person and be like, I want to oppress and pretend to lynch you, you sons of bitches," which is at the core essentially of what I'm saying. But in a situation where I'm teaching and sharing, that's not going to be helpful. That's just going to be off-putting, and what's the word I'm looking for? An oversimplification.
Yes,
you
that's
know?
Very true.
And. And so sharing it in that way enables me to say, look, I do feel very strongly about this. Am I going to say it's wrong? No, because I guarantee you somewhere on the planet, that would be the line that would work for someone.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say don't ever say it because there might be someone longing for you.
Right. But that is the shit that they want to hear.
Yes.
And that's just going to make for like an auto sploosh, and then the rest of the scene is just completely mind blown.
Yeah, you know, and I adjusted my take on that after seeing, you know, and this was back in the days of alt.com when I adopted as law, no one wants to see your dick. You know, with every shot, every alt.com profile, it's like dick, 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 dick. It's a lot of dick. No one wants to see that. I want to know who you are, whatever else. And then seeing a photograph of a dick that had literally thousands of likes and hundreds of comments about what people would do to this person's dick. And I sat there and I said, well, that's interesting. And since then, I have observed that my idea that no one wants to see a picture of your dick as your profile shot is not a universal law. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to take it back. Not going to say nobody wants to see your dick. I'm going to say, in my opinion, and I feel very strongly about this, having a picture of your penis as a profile picture sends a specific message.
Yes.
It might be the message you want to send. And there may very well be people who have been like, yeah, I'm waiting for that dick shot. And I did find myself one day looking at a picture of a penis and going, that is a gorgeous penis. I can see if you would want to put a picture of it on the internet. It's magnificent. Kudos, my friend.
Right, but here's the other thing, and this is like a, I'm going to use some like email terminology here. There's a real big difference between push and pull in that situation. There's a huge difference between making your profile pic, which people have to click to, a picture of your penis, regardless of its magnificence. There's a huge difference between that and deciding that somebody should see your, yes, I know, we're talking about penises. That somebody, you deciding for somebody else that they should see your magnificence. Like, that's like fucking night and day.
Right, and that's ultimately the point I come back to is whether or not it is magnificent. Having it as your main picture does put it into a different realm on several levels. One of which is that really the way you want to represent yourself? A and B, I can't necessarily opt out seeing your main profile picture.
What you can opt out by not clicking through to that profile.
Yeah, but I still see the thumbnail. If I'm scrolling down a list of people's profiles and I'm like, someone's face, a butt, some handcuffs, a dick, a dick, a dick, a dick, a dick.
Yeah, okay, fair.
You know, I'm still
I'm thinking of,
seeing it.
I guess I'm thinking of FetLife, where the profile pics that I see are people that I follow. And so
It's true.
like I don't see I don't see rando profile pics.
Right.
Unless I'm in a situation where it's like, hey,
A thread.
show me who's in Toronto, or yeah, or I'm following a thread, right? But if I'm following a thread, and I will say that I go on FetLife about once every 6 to 8 months. If I'm following a thread, and for anybody who's interested, I'm the control enthusiast on FetLife.
The control enthusiast, the only one.
The I am that is in well. The only handle. And actually, you know what? I may not even be to show how much or how rarely I'm on FetLife, I may in fact be just control enthusiast. I can't, whatever. Search. It's not that exciting anyways. There's nothing super fun on my FetLife profile. But the point is this, if I'm following a thread, if I'm clicking through and clicking around a thread, then yeah, I'll see some randos. Maybe some of those will be penises. Maybe some of those will be butts. Maybe some of those will be boobs. Maybe some of those will be, you know, pictures of Brandon Lee as the crow. Like, there's a whole mess of ways that people feel like they want to sort of present themselves in a form where you have 100% total control over the way that you present themselves. And isn't it remarkable how freeing that is? And that's something that is worth another conversation. Before we get too far away, though,
Don't get too far.
I want to bring us back a little bit to Paula Deen.
Full circle.
It's totally full circle. Because here's the thing: you had said, and I'm gonna see if I can actually remember this train of thought. It was connected with doing a demo in class and the idea of being both in the scene but also conscious of what's happening. Okay, that's it.
Right.
So let's say that you were to get a bunch of kinky folk to staff this wedding, and I'm going to say it again and shake my head while I'm saying it, plantation wedding
Plantation wedding.
organized by Paula Deen. So let's say that you could get those folks
Have to
together,
put
right?
the fetish on FetLife now you realize I have to do
We'll just see how long it actually takes.
it.
None of those people could treat that as a scene.
Well, they could in their head if they wanted to, right?
But would they be able to safe word out of it?
No, not without not getting paid.
So it's no longer a scene. And because it's no longer a scene, and because the intention on both their part and the part of the motherfuckers who are getting served, it becomes a totally different deal.
Yeah.
Because if it's a scene, you need to be able to call that shit off when you are done. And who knows what happens if somebody's serving the whatever, the amuse-bouche, And the person that they're dropping the whatever yogurt parfait in front of says something, kicks something off in the brain, and they're done.
Yeah, you're fucked.
So, right? They're like it done. And that's not something that can be like every single person in that place is going to have a different point at which they're done. And because they all have their own story, they all have their own history, they all have different degrees to which they have done research. So it becomes probably not as fun.
I don't think it would be fun at all, frankly. Fun would be it would be a job. I doubt that they would be having a thoroughly enjoyable time. And mind you, I have done dinner parties. I mean, hey, I'm an actor. Of course, I have handed a canapé in my fucking time, right? I have done so in some very highfalutin situations with highfalutin people, and that's super awesome. Have there been times when I have walked back into the prep kitchen and wanted to throw things? Certainly, but you kind of just suit up and you jump back in. I will say that none of those instances were related to flagrant racism. They were related to flagrant classism and privilege. As I do a cursory glance back over those times when I've been like, I'm going to kick her off of their fucking shoes and knock down a flight of stairs. It's because they were just kind of being a privileged dick. And I'm like, ah, yes, rich people, this is really just how they are. In a situation where you have the extra added layer of it being you essentially playing the role in the dinner party of a slave, right? Because that's what you're asking these catering people to do. You're asking them to play slaves. Without any of the attendant niceties that most perverts would consider to be polite, which is negotiating safe words and timeouts and check-ins,
And aftercare.
I doubt Pauline is going to come to the kitchen. Hey, I'm having a hard time with the white guy at 23. Talks about what's going to happen down on Slave Row later tonight. Anyone? You cool? Anyone need a hug? Like, I doubt that that's going to be the way that shit is handled.
I agree. It's not going to be the way it's handled at all.
And so what you are doing is you are really just digging so deeply into this country's painful, shameful history around this particular topic. There's so many wells of painful, shameful history. I mean, I wonder if, for example, what if Paula Deen was planning an Alamo party, right? He was like, yeah, we're going to get a bunch of Indians to come in and provide like the party entertainment and, have a general custer of whatever the fucking nightmare they would come up with. Your jaw would fall open. You'd just be like, what the fuck? But then there would be people whose jaws wouldn't fall open. And they'd be like, oh, yes, of course. Well, yeah, let's bring in Indians, and that's how that goes.
Yeah, sort of some like all of the place settings and the table settings and the centerpieces would be some sort of, I don't know, like.
We're at 30 minutes, so okay, I have to pause and
Oh.
the thing. So pause.